two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen. Ew.
And we are here with Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, and my broadcast partner is
Amy Donaldson,
right over there.
Yeah. And, welcome back, Jason.
Yes, I am back in one piece. So I just went on a vacation. It's kind of weird. It was a family vacation, but it's not totally a vacation because August of 1619 began the. What we now know as the Western slave trade. So yeah. I went to Ghana to kind of learn about history and do some. There's some family history involved, but I don't want you to get the impression that like all my family's from Ghana because that ain't true. There's so many countries involved in this. Mm-hmm. But being there and seeing the dungeons and some of the less than. There was no fun in that.
No, it's very sobering.
It was very
right?
sobering, yeah, yeah. But it was enlightening. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that I love doing it, and we're going to do a show about that a little later.
Absolutely. Because I went to the East African
that's right.
slave
and I went
trade
to the West side,
site.
Right.
So, yeah, so we got
to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And but today, I'm
back. Glad you had that experience, though.
I did. I am.
And I'm glad you're back.
I am back, and I'll tell you something, jet lag is for real. Because I am struggling. I could barely stay up to 10 o'clock. last night, I'm doing a jazz beat now for a little while, and I had to stay up to midnight. Do you know I am dying? And,
no.
But then I wake up at weird hours of the morning, because I'm supposed to be up earlier than that.
Your age is showing there,
my friend. It's totally true. Well, joining us today
I'm very excited about today.
Our award-winning Deseret News National Religion Reporter is Kelsey Dallas. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk about some... You know, I wasn't, because I was out of the country, a thing.
Yeah, not aware of some
right.
of these things.
But when I get back, I kind of find out what's happening, and I'm a little surprised by this kind of kerfuffle, but I do understand what you're saying. There seems to be a bit of hypocrisy in kind of how she's behaving.
Well, it depends on how you view it. So let's just lay the foundation for this. Ellen went to a Dallas Cowboys. They were playing the Packers. She's a very good friend of Aaron Rodgers. She actually got invited to sit in the box. I think it was
Jerry Jones's box suite.
And so she does a little video. She, you know, Ellen's big on, if you follow her on social media, she does hilarious things. And she shows who's in the box and starts on the side with her wife and talking to some other people, you know, people who are in the box, and it ends with a kind of funny picture of George W. Bush, and he's kind of looking kind of goofy like he does sometimes, and then everybody laughs, and it seemed like no big deal. Well, what happened was an immediate backlash from the LGBTQ community saying, how can you be friends with this guy, hang out with this guy, be there in the box with this guy, who everybody thinks that it's because
Some people were saying he's a war criminal because he got us into this war that we didn't, there were no weapons of mass destruction. But a lot of the LGBTQ concerns were that he advocated for Brett Kavanaugh and to be on the Supreme Court. And now the Supreme Court is hearing, is it three cases, Kelsey?
You know better than me. Yeah, three on a similar topic about if it's legal to fire someone for being gay or transgender.
Yeah, and so they're considering those cases right now, mm-hmm. which a lot of, understandably, people are upset that now this looks like this may be an issue, right? Mm-hmm. So, because you have a 5-4 majority mm-hmm. of conservative justices. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing was, you've betrayed us. You're hanging out with this guy who, you know, you could either have issues with the war he got us into, or you could have issues with the fact that he advocated for Brett Kavanaugh. And then Ellen defended herself saying, hey, when I said be nice to everyone, I meant everyone. People who believe differently than you, people you disagree with. And one thing I have loved about Ellen is she pretty much has had everybody on, and she does talk to everybody. She does have some lines, some extremes. She said she would never have Donald Trump on. She would never talk with him. And as you know from listening to the show, I said I would actually take a meeting with Donald Trump. So I'm a firm believer. That's what we advocate for on this podcast is, like, you only learn. Yeah, you only learn if you talk to people who disagree with you, mm-hmm. right? And if you talk to only people who agree with you, first of all, you're going to think, I'm so smart and I'm right. Mm-hmm. And you really should expand your worldview. So anyway, I want to have Kelsey on. You've been writing about all these subjects. So you've been writing about Supreme Court cases. One of the few people I know who's probably read all the briefs. I only read the amicus brief. Mm-hmm. And I will say, as a mom of a gay kid, it was upsetting to me. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to separate how I feel personally with how I feel about how you should, you know, have these kinds of discussions in a public domain. Mm-hmm. Because I think this is one of those situations when you're talking about religious freedom and individual civil rights, mm-hmm. where we have this kind of, you know, collision. And for me, it's an easy one. I think that if you get to believe what you want in your churches, then people get to mm-hmm. marry who they want, right? But there definitely are some issues, and mm-hmm. we've talked about them on the show. What was your thought about the Ellen, situation. I guess the controversy. Yeah. We'll call it the controversy. I don't know what else to call it.
Well, it felt very familiar to me in a strange way. I certainly don't host a talk show. I'm not followed by tens of thousands of people on social media, but I have had that same type of backlash to stories mm-hmm. I've written, which was like, why did you even interview that person? Mm. That's not a legitimate concern. It's not that person's a war criminal. It's just that their opinion is so upsetting that they shouldn't even be quoted. And as a reporter, I'm trying to defend the work that I do and say, hey, there are opinions all across the spectrum on this, and my job is to bring them to the surface and sort of bring them in conversation with each other. And I just feel that more and more folks aren't interested in those types of conversations. They're reacting mm-hmm. and they're saying it's better for us to just play nicely with those who we already get along with and just sort of forget about everybody else.
So they want to stay in their echo chamber, kind of?
Yes. And I think you might first assume that it's just sort of trolls, that it's just people who are going to get mad at you no matter what, but mm-hmm. it's just happening more and more, and it's emails I receive and responses, and I think this is a growing group of Americans that are very troubled by the idea of searching for common ground and would prefer to say, this is the correct approach and let's not sort of hear other opinions.
So even hearing you say that, I say to myself, what are we afraid of? Mm-hmm. Do you get a sense of why people seem to be reluctant to want to have discussions mm-hmm. that are different than the views they already hold?
Yes, I think that as someone, I have a lot of friends who identify as LGBTQ, and what I've heard from them in their concerns is that it's not good neighborliness to sort of reach out and build bridges with someone who is actually dehumanizing members of their community, that is sort of speaking in such inappropriate or aggressive language to where it makes it sound like someone who's a member of the LGBT community sort of doesn't belong here.
Or shouldn't exist.
Changed.
I mean, I think if you're especially transgender people right now,
yes.
Where you can't use a restroom, you know, you can't exist in public spaces in a lot of ways. They won't recognize, they won't allow you to do certain things. And I think those are the people who are maybe the most, you know, we see them as the most fragile mm-hmm. if you're an ally of the LGBTQ community. And so I think that's where it sort of gets personal. So,
yes.
And I always say, like, people say, well, it's just politics, right? Or it's just, you know, why do you care? And politics is how we solve societal problems. So you have to care about how politics talks about and treats human beings, because when it says people are 3/5 of a human,
yeah,
that's a problem.
And that's not just politics, by the way. That actually happened.
But that really happened, and that has had a lasting impact on this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it comes from.
People feel that today.
When we come back, I want to continue this discussion and go back to Amy's point about, because Ellen defended herself, saying try to be kind to people.
Yeah.
And if you listen to this show, you know that Amy has tried to get me to be kinder to people, and it's that's an uphill battle if there ever was a thing. But I would like to discuss that a little more in detail
sure.
when we come
and
back.
And what that looks like.
Absolutely. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today, we're joined by Kelsey Dallas. She is the award-winning national religion reporter for the Deseret News, who employs all of us, actually.
Who does amazing work and is an amazing follow on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
@Kelsey_Dallas.
Okay.
And there you go.
You'll see lots of pictures of her dogs, too. One dog, right?
Yeah.
What kind of
dog? Well, we don't even want to talk about cats today, do we?
A little chihuahua that's mixed with, we think, a dachshund. So a pretty long chihuahua.
A chihuahua.
Yeah.
I had a chihuahua. Yeah,
there's a really feisty dog, too.
Yeah. Very loud.
I was going to imagine, right? So we're talking today, at least in the first two segments, regarding Ellen DeGeneres was at a Dallas Cowboys Packer football game. And she was sitting in Jerry Jones, the owner's box, mm-hmm. with former president George W. Bush.
George W. Bush, yeah.
And apparently she says they're friends,
mm-hmm.
which mm-hmm. would seem to be a bit of a kind of a surprise, because President Bush is and was evangelical Christian, mm-hmm. and he had certain views on things, and particularly as it relates to Brett Kavanaugh now, and they have an issue in the Supreme Court facing the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
Folks were pretty upset, up in arms, about how she would be friendly with a person who had such diverging views from who she is personally,
yeah.
let alone other people around the country.
I think it's similar. Remember, we had a discussion about Kanye meeting with President Trump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So it was a similar thing. Like, how can you betray us? And I do think, if you haven't read it, Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote an amazing piece on what it feels like to be a token. Right? So when you are a person of color, or if you've been disenfranchised in this...
If you're a woman.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say women have it as bad, but
well, not as bad,
definitely
but
LGBTQ.
In certain spaces.
But there are groups like LGBTQ, people of color, who when they get a person in the circle of power, right? They want that person to be like Sammy Davis Jr. You guys are all too. Jason and I are old enough to remember this. But he actually did. He got a hug from President Nixon, right?
He,
and it was a hug heard around the world,
a
right?
Hug, and he was
ostracized.
If you see it, if you go back and watch some video, I have never seen somebody who was hurt to their heart.
Wow.
By how negatively he was portrayed by other black people.
And
in
let
America.
Me tell you. Malcolm Gladwell did an amazing podcast
yes,
on this
did.
Very
Absolutely.
Subject, and it really dives in deep into
Revisionist
this whole,
history, if
this whole idea of do you represent yourself
Absolutely.
When you express a political view, or do you represent your community, right? Because I think most of the time we feel like I'm just saying what I think, right? But we represent the paper. So when I talk to my neighbors, I'm careful because I know they don't think of me as just a regular mm-hmm. person, right? But I think it would be even more weight if I represented a community and I was in the public sphere. So that was it. I wanted to just kind of frame this segment of the conversation, though, with a quote from one of my favorite guys, James Baldwin. He says, we can love, and he was talking about politics,
mm-hmm.
we can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and the denial of my humanity and my right to exist. And to me, that is where the line mm-hmm. is, right? So how do you, but here's the thing. Even if I disagree with George W. Bush on literally almost every single thing he's ever done, right? And mostly the way in which things were done, because I loved a lot of people who worked for him, including Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. I think they're amazing leaders and human beings. And but I think that when it. I have a daughter who's a lesbian, and I think that when you say, I know what struggle she had to tell her employer that she was gay,
mm-hmm.
and should she tell that employer? And the employer kept making assumptions about her husband, or if she was going on a date, that it was with a man, and she felt dishonest not correcting him. And so she finally told him, and it was no problem. But I wonder now, like, as I read the brief, like, what does, if you don't protect her right to that job because of her sexual orientation, like, what are you exposing her to? And I, if you've met my oldest daughter, she's literally the most loving kid on the planet. And I just don't think she deserves to be fired from a job because of who she is. And I feel, so for me, we can disagree about politics, and I'll, you know me, I'm a definite, like, keep talking, keep having the conversation. I think Ellen should talk to, how is George W. Bush ever going to change his mind? If he never knows and sees the humanity and loves people from the LGBTQ community.
No, I agree, because you're, when we live in these echo chambers where everyone shares your opinion, there is no opportunity to move a little more to the center or to change your mind, or at least to understand the people that you're arguing with a little better.
To me, it's understanding. That's what we aim for here, is stop trying to persuade everybody that you're right.
I don't have to, you don't, we shouldn't have to agree, but we should understand where we're coming from.
Yeah, but you should understand my anxiety with saying that businesses can refuse to serve my kid, right? Like, you may not, you may say, like, I still think a business owner has the right to work with who they want to work with, because that's their, you know, we can, and I can see that argument. I can understand, like, we own a podcast business, and I said, if somebody came to me and said, I would like to start a white supremacy podcast, I would say, take it elsewhere. We're not going to, and we're not going to
enter. We're a private business.
Yeah, but that, but so are the bakers who are saying we don't want
to. And I think they should be able to do that too.
And so, but that's that. But now it's spreading to, like, healthcare, right? Should a doctor be able to say, I don't want to serve, I don't want to, I don't want to do transgender surgery, right? There are these little, and they seem easy. Right. Yeah. They, when you step away from it, you say, well, you should have to do, like, people have the right to have access to whatever they need in this life. But then when you talk to people and you understand their conviction, right, their personal religious conviction, it gets much harder. And that's where I think, if you want to look to an example locally, look to Troy Williams.
Well, I was going to say, if you don't want to compromise or talk to someone because they're trying to oppress who you are, that James Baldwin quote, I think there's a sort of parallel thread that's going on in the country today, which is these issues are so contentious that there is no sort of let's all hold hands and skip together afterwards. There is no sort of ultimate solution on some of these. And I think that's why some people would rather just not have the conversation.
It's because they don't feel like they'll get to a
there
a
is
finality.
No place to
there,
get
there
to.
Is. I think the holding hands and skipping is not happening. I don't want to hold hands and skip with George W. Bush. I don't want to hate him either, right?
No, but I mean, but that's the whole point, I think. So for me, what is distressing is kind of what Kelsey just said, you know, because there is no holding hands and skipping at the end, or this whole kumbaya moment, that we don't want to have the discussion at all.
At all.
Because as adults, and again, these are primarily adult discussions, that we know that we don't always agree. And that's okay, but I don't necessarily have to hate you for it. And again, going back to kind of what Amy talks about, you know, and I think what Ellen was trying to say is, you know, to be kind to people. You know, even if George Bush has some very, I don't know, distressing points of view that really, that Ellen may even feel like oppressed people like her, who are LGBTQ, you know. But she finds it in her heart to say, he can have that opinion, because the rest of the world doesn't see me that way, and I still have my ability to live and prosper in this in the country we live in, and hopefully in other places, in other spaces where you go around the world. So isn't it incumbent upon us all to figure out a way, even you use the white supremacist example, you know, when those people came to me and say, if for some reason, if they wanted to say to me they wanted to have this podcast, I'm like, you know what, I hear where you're coming from, but I can't be party to that. And that's what I would say to them, you know. It's not that they can't have it; they just can't have it with me for in my establishment. And I would, and I think they would understand why. Now they can try to sue me if they want to, saying that I'm being discriminatory. But I'm not saying that they can't do what they want to do. I just said I don't want to be party to it, and it, I can't be. I shouldn't be forced to have to be party to it. Which is why I don't necessarily agree with the Supreme Court making bakers accept. You know, first of all, I don't. If the people don't want to make my cake, I don't want them to make it. Because I don't even want to know what that picture is.
But let me add a complicating factor. What if you live in a What if none of the bakers want to help you? What if you can't get a cake baked?
Then, I learned to bake myself.
Cakes are one thing. But yeah, but a lot of, what if you couldn't get a plumber? Like, there are things people can't do for themselves. Like, baking a cake is one thing, right? And I, like, my daughter just went to a, up at the University of Utah, they had an LGBTQ wedding expo. And so she said the businesses that showed up, even though they knew there weren't going to be a lot of people there, those are the businesses I'm going to support. And so that's the way we think it should work. But the reality is that a lot of people, millions of Americans, live in smaller communities where there's only two or three plumbers or there's only one or two contractors. And if you can't get those services because you're gay, that's a problem.
I think that many religious freedom advocates were disappointed and depressed that that Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Baker case at the Supreme Court last year, was so contentious, because it was sort of like, this should be an opportunity to have good conversations. Wedding cakes matter, but not so much as life-saving healthcare. And so it was very startling how quickly lines were drawn and people were throwing stones at each other over that type of issue.
And sadly, we all kind of talk about earlier, we haven't figured out a way to coexist, even though we may have differing points of view. We're going to have to switch because we've got two more segments coming up. Now we're going to talk about some politics. I mean, well, distinctly politics rather than kind of on the periphery here. The Democratic debates, right? When we come back, we'll talk about debating policy and all kinds of things that would probably drive most conservatives a little crazy. But that's what we're here for. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And today we are here with Kelsey Dallas. She is the national religion reporter for the Deseret News. And on this particular segment, we're going to start off talking about... So when I'm out of the country, everything starts to happen, apparently. there was a forum regarding... LGBTQ issues?
Yes. So last Thursday night, CNN hosted an LGBTQ rights town hall along with the Human Rights Campaign, which is a very well-known advocacy organization. And they gave sort of 9 candidates, I believe, 30 minutes to answer questions and talk about their
views. That's a long forum.
Yes, it was, but it was so fascinating because they were able to touch on so many different important topics, such as what should happen when religious freedom comes in conflict with gay rights, or how the Supreme Court should rule on that case about the rights of gay and transgender workers. And I was really impressed with the range of questions that were asked and sort of the depth of issues that were explored.
Yeah, and that's what I just watched pieces of it. I didn't watch all of it. But I and part of it was I was afraid of... Like I said, when an issue feels really personal to you, like that, you do shy away from this. Because one thing that I have sort of been grappling with the last month, and you guys can give me your thoughts on this, is this idea of tolerance, right? And I hear this a lot in regards to LGBTQ. We need to be tolerant. We need to be tolerant. I don't think my kid wants to be tolerated. I think she wants to be embraced. I don't think anybody wants
to be. But you can't make people embrace you.
No, no, but I just think that idea of, like, our goal is tolerance is a bad goal. And I think our goal should be, you know, acceptance that people don't live the way we do, right? Yeah. And that doesn't make them any less human or legitimate. And you want to do what you want. I always say I give as much, you know, love and compassion to people as I want, because I want to be treated well. I want to be allowed to live my life in the fullness that I see my way. And I want to give that opportunity to other people as well. So, but that's a difficult thing when those things come into collision. One thing I thought was interesting was, so we talked a little bit about the Ellen George W. Bush debate. Is this Elizabeth Warren debate too? So she makes a joke. So someone said it was Sally Field's son. Do you know if that's right?
Oh, I don't remember.
So a gentleman asks a question of Elizabeth Warren. He said, what would you say to a he said a person of faith said, it's my religious conviction that marriage is between one man and one woman. And she, like, you could just see, she was like, yes, I've been waiting for this softball all night. And she said, and I love Saturday Night Live's Saturday Night Live did a parody of this where she becomes basically first a stand-up comedian and then a drag queen. It was awesome. But she says, I'm first going to assume this is a man, which made everybody laugh. And then she said, I would tell you to marry one woman. And then everybody laughs about that. And then she walks turns and walks away, and then she turns around and says, if you can find one. Mm-hmm. And everybody just loses it, including the guy who asked the question. Mm-hmm. So I thought that there were two things. First of all, I laughed. I thought that was hilarious. But I also thought that normally you have to answer that question mm-hmm. in a serious way and address your feelings and policies. Mm-hmm. But she just basically said what I have felt, which is why do gay people have to declare their sexuality? Why are we still in this discussion? Mm-hmm. Like, you are who you are, you're married to who you are, and all we're doing is getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. It's why I think people are tired of coming out stories, right? Yeah. Because, and it was just, interestingly, just National Coming mm-hmm. Out Day, but I feel like it was just a way of saying, well, if that's what you believe, then live your belief. Mm-hmm. Where that's how I feel about religious. If that's your belief, live your belief. That's not my belief.
And although many more conservative people of faith were upset about that moment
yeah.
and sort of disgusted with the idea that you would just dismiss some long-held religious belief that marriage mm-hmm. is reserved for one man and one woman, it is important to keep in mind the audience that she was speaking to. This was mm-hmm. a forum for an audience of folks that are members of the LGBT community or allies. And so this was the time that she could sort of connect with them, say that some of these old habits that we have of speaking about same-sex marriage are just ridiculous and frustrating. And so she would probably answer that incredibly differently a year from now if she was on the main debate stage. And so it was just this strange juxtaposition of speaking to this very specific audience while also at a nationally televised event.
So do you think her making that joke was dismissive of people's religious faith about marriage? Because if you came to me and said, Amy, I believe marriage is between one man and one woman, I would say, cool, I don't. Like, mm-hmm. That would just be the end of it. You know, I might not make a joke because I'm not that funny, mm-hmm. but I didn't think it was dismissive as much as it was saying, your religious belief doesn't determine who I marry. It determines who you marry, mm-hmm. right?
I think it was an important point in that sense, but it felt, speaking on behalf of a lot of the more conservative folks I interview, it felt dismissive because of the slew of other comments throughout the night from other candidates, including the way Warren herself answered some questions that were sort of like, anytime religious freedom protections butt up against LGBTQ rights, religious freedom just has to take the back seat, and LGBTQ rights deserve their sort of the focus of our conversations. And so I think there were many folks listening in and feeling threatened, and then that type of joke approach just made a little worse.
Can I jump in here for a second?
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things I find that's a little distressing is that people, when they, for instance, and I'm not picking on the religious people. I'm going to preface this by saying this. You know, it's not about them. Mm-hmm. All right. That's what people do, because they make it about themselves rather than this forum was about the people in the audience. So when you said, you know, she's talking to the audience, well, we just happen to be flies on the wall.
Yeah.
We were not the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we can't make it about, you can't always make it about yourself.
Yeah.
So when she was speaking to those people, she literally was speaking to those people. Mm-hmm. And I know in years past when I've watched particularly different issues, because I'm black, I follow these kinds of things, that when I hear non-white people try to tell me how I should feel about different things, or that
I feel about a black issue. Yeah.
My right to have my freedoms impose somehow limits your ability, like this is some zero-sum mm-hmm. game, I always want to say, like, it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
I have had this struggle going uphill for reasons that are completely illegitimate, by the way, because it's discriminatory. I just want what you have, which is not taken away from you. It just gives me what I deserve. Similarly, with the LGBTQ issues and as it relates to religious freedom, I don't want the religious people not to have their religious freedom. I just want to have my LGBTQ freedom. Mm-hmm. And those two things can coexist.
Yeah.
You just have to recognize that you get to live your way, I get to live my mm-hmm. way, and I'm not imposing my will on you mm-hmm. by doing either.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's an important point for me, is that somehow, like, my mom's a very religious woman and very faithful, and we had a great conversation about this. But she said, my beliefs, she's LDS, she's very faithful. I wouldn't know what to do if my mom wasn't her, right? We've interviewed
Absolutely.
Her on this show. But she said, my faith and my beliefs don't have anything to do with what Rachel's doing in her life, mm. right? So, and having, she wants Rachel to have all the opportunities that all her other grandkids have. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want Rachel to lose her job because of who she is, because all of her other grandkids have protections in place. Mm-hmm. You know, she has grandkids of different races. She wouldn't want them dismissed because they were Mexican or because they were Polynesian. So she, I never understood it, but that's why I think it's critical to keep discussing. Mm-hmm. My ability to get married and buy a cake shouldn't impact my mom's ability to go to church and worship exactly as she believes.
Mm-hmm. And I like to believe that it probably doesn't. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and today we're speaking with award-winning national religion reporter for the Deseret News, Kelsey Dallas, and we are kind of in the midst of this discussion regarding the recent forum, I guess it was a political forum, primarily and focused on LGBTQ issues, and each of the Democratic candidates got a half an hour. Oh my, that is a long time. to 9 candidates to do that. I mean, that's just hours and hours and hours. But you guys, I was out of the country, so I didn't have to endure it.
Jason's a self-described atheist, so you know, probably not his favorite forum. I thought it was a really fascinating thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. I think singling it, you know, like honing in on certain issues or certain groups is really I think it's really interesting because you do get just sound bites here and there. Like yeah. you don't, and in those debates, you don't get real answers, mm-hmm. right? So that's why I kind of loved the parts of it that I watched. But
well, I was going to say that I actually, these candidates, although they were in hot water for some of the things they said, as conservative religious folks having some pushback, maybe these candidates should be applauded for taking this moment to really speak to members of the LGBT community instead of just repeating sort of stump speech lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they did have real conversations. And I thought, I'm more and more impressed with Pete Buttigieg. Mm-hmm. Like, I really think some of the things he brings
literally,
up.
This is right up his alley.
Yeah, but I think that, I mean, it wasn't what I expected from mm-hmm. him, right? I thought his he addressed faith concerns, in my opinion, in the most thoughtful way mm-hmm. of any of the candidates. I don't know how you felt, but for me, the ones that I watched, he was the one who said there is a reason to consider someone's faith, you know, in this mm-hmm. in this discussion, right? And he is a self-described person of faith. So I think that for me, I understand some of the, I have all of the above in my family and friend group. And so when we talk about, and we have these discussions, luckily, one way in which I see the fears of and concerns of religious or spiritual people when it comes to something like this. So if you're a person of faith and your faith says, marriages between one man and one woman. One of the concerns that I hear and we've discussed is, but I don't want my church to have to be to accept this, right? Yeah. As a doctrine. Our doctrine is this. Mm-hmm. It is, and so we don't want to have to change that. Mm-hmm. And that is what people are afraid of if they say, yes, gay marriage is legal. And I think you heard of this addressed in LDS conference, right? Where he said, yes, the law of the land is that marriage is legal between same gendered people, but that's not our faith. Mm-hmm. Our faith is one man, one woman. And so I think that the real issue comes down to where religious freedom crosses over into public domain. And one of those areas, unfortunately, is marriage. Mm-hmm. And so when people get married, where do they go to get married, mm-hmm. right? They look for, well, oftentimes we've just, the state has really abdicated the majority of marriage issues to religious groups. So you find a, you know, you can get a judge if you're not religious, but by and large, people go to a religious leader of some kind, and there are religious leaders who will marry same-sex couples.
Plenty of people get married at the courthouse.
Yeah, judges. That's why I said judges, but the vast majority. And Ed's married people, but the vast majority of people get married by a religious person, mm-hmm. you know, religious leader in some kind of religious setting. So I think that if you separated those two things, you know, more and made it so that marriage was a contract between two people versus a religious, a sacred ceremony mm-hmm. that the state sanctions, mm-hmm. I think you, and then religious groups could do what they want, but there would be a state sanctioned, mm-hmm. you know, contract that mm-hmm. between two people. That's just my, what do you guys think about that? Because I think marriage is the one.
I'm going to let the lady go first. I got a whole other thing coming on after this.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting that you bring that up because it's been sort of floating around since states were considering legalizing mm-hmm. gay marriage and then, of course, the big Supreme Court case. And I think there were many people who were supportive of that approach, but then there was a backlash that's like, no, we want to have our marriages in the eyes of God. We want churches to still be involved. And then the comfort was, well, at least everybody can agree that churches deserve to make their own doctrinal decisions, mm-hmm. that we can sort of protect them. And so that's sort of always been throughout cake baker cases or healthcare worker cases. It's like, at the very least, we can all agree that churches have to make their own decisions about their beliefs and then behave accordingly. And I think that was another interesting something that emerged from that town hall was that there were calls from Beto O'Rourke to remove a church's tax-exempt status if it won't sort of comply with LGBT non-discrimination protection. So it was sort of like this final frontier. Oh my gosh, how could we finally get here? This is so scary. And there have been candidates like Pete Buttigieg who have disavowed O'Rourke's claim, have said we need to protect our churches. But it is wild to think that suddenly in 2019 we're already discussing sort of should a church be allowed to even teach that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Now, interestingly, okay, so I'm going to dial something back here. Marriage, completely 100% a human construct. It doesn't exist in nature, right? It's something we came up with. Mm-hmm. We created this institution, and to make it legal, it does not have to be done in a because I'm separating church and state literally right here.
Yeah.
Because the only part of the religious part is you wanting to be in this church and say this in front of your Lord and Savior or your prophet. However, the part that the state cares about is the contract those two people are making that says we are now married and there are tax implications. Mm-hmm. And some other, individual implications.
Yeah, I think there are way more implications in that.
But they're legal implications, is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
And say this, the legality part is all that's important to them. Mm-hmm. So we have conflated these things. Mm-hmm. We as a society. Because
for a good reason, though.
That's not the point.
I know, but I think for good reason.
But not the point. What I'm saying is we conflate. In reality, it's really only a legal issue because that's why you can go to the courts and ask and say you can't discriminate. Mm-hmm. It's not that you the religious people can't have it their way. They just can't have it in a way that interferes with that legal part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
and that's where I think that's where people don't realize that's where the line is drawn. Once you cross the part that says you are now interfering and discriminating against my legal rights to do something, that is to be married. Mm-hmm. To have this contract together with a person I choose, not you.
Yeah,
that's where there's the issue.
But there is no line. You're saying there's a line, but what Beto says is, O'Rourke, I should probably say both names, is that if you are, it's just like the cake baker. You said cake bakers shouldn't have to serve gay people.
I don't think they should have to, but I mean,
but so if I'm a church and I say I don't marry gay people, Beto is saying that I lose my tax exempt status. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem.
Tax exempt status is a problem, but we can go through that one day too.
No, I think the work churches do.
Oh, stop it.
I'm a firm believer in the good stuff they do, especially.
And I would be the guy, the atheist guy, saying no.
No.
Well, but it does relate to what Jason was saying about what does it look like to truly separate church and state. And for a long time, tax exemption was seen as separation because it's saying we don't have to give you our financial files. We'll sort of stay in our own little zone. But maybe we're moving towards a vision of separation of church and state where it says no public sort of favors, no legal overlap with churches at all. They just need to be treated like any other organization.
Yeah. And maybe that's the direction we're moving. But I'm saying that's why people were upset about what Beto said was because they're saying you're saying it's OK for us to do what we want to do. And as you know, for example, LDS people, we don't want to have gay marriage in our churches or in our temples, then we would lose our tax exempt status. And that's the fear. That's the problem with that. I don't think there is a line. There is a conversation that we have to keep having, but there isn't, like, we haven't all agreed, like, this is where the line is.
Now, by the way, I don't think that churches should have to be forced to marry these people because they have other options. You could, churches in some way is private, right? Mm-hmm. It's your religion is your religion. There are distinct differences between Islam and Judaism and Christianity, but within Christianity, there's all these little subcultures, even though they're kind of the same. The LDS Church is very similar to the way that Catholic Church is run, and you know, there's a lot of similarities. All I'm saying, I'm not saying it's exactly the same. So, but my point though is
Jason Lee won.
Well, no, the idea here is that churches should be able to decide how they run themselves. Mm-hmm. They are individual entities. Upon themselves, and we shouldn't tell them how they should do it. Now, that is to say, they can discriminate to some degree, but they can't do it, you know, by and large. And if they don't want to have a religious ceremony in their church that is against their faith, then, to be honest with you, I don't see a problem with that at all.
Would we take the tax-exempt status from a church that discriminated based on race?
I would say to you that I would have a different discussion about that, and I would be happy to have it with you.
We have done that to a faith-based college.
That's
yes.
right. Yeah. And certainly, yeah. there becomes a whole thing here, right?
Yeah.
However, again, we have to stop now.
But yeah,
so I cannot begin that discussion.
She
throws in front of me.
Keep having these conversations.
That's right.
Like, yeah. To
that's
me,
right.
the only bad thing is to stop talking to yep. people who disagree with you.
Kelsey, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a great conversation. Okay, so I'm going to say I'm going to be, hopefully the next time you hear from me, the jet lag will have disappeared at least a little bit. I'm praying that that's what's going to happen to me. Join us for the next episode of the Voice Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @vorpodcast. You can check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.